ॐ पार्थायत् प्रतिबोधिताम् भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतिताम् पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीम् भगवतीम् अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम् बद्ध्वामनुसन्तधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी. शक्नोति हृदयः सोढुम् शक्नोति हृदयः सोढुम् प्राक्शरीरविमोक्षणात् प्राक्शरीरविमोक्षणात् कामक्रोधोद्भवम् वेगम् कामक्रोधोद्भवम् वेगम् सयुक्तस्य सुखी नरः सयुक्तस्य सुखी नरः. शक्नोति इह एव यः सोढुम् प्राक् शरीरविमोक्षणात् काम क्रोध उद्भवम् वेगम् सः युक्तः सः सुखी नरः. In the previous verse, we're talking really about the jnani, about the person who has assimilated knowledge, that the bhogas, the enjoyments, sensory enjoyments, all enjoyments born of the senses. So all of those enjoyments are dukkha yoniha. They are a womb for dukkha. They're really the source of dukkha. Why? Because they have a beginning and an end. Like they're subject to change. Just invariably, that's the fact of it. So because all of these are subject to change, there's no constant. So even if there is an ananda, a fullness, a happiness that's being experienced, that happiness will come to an end. It's just the nature of things. And since the ananda, if the ananda has been superimposed on the object or the situation, and that situation will come to an end, there's always going to be a loss of ananda, a loss of happiness. And so for the person, the one who recognized that, those who recognize that, the buddhaha, they don't revel. It goes, na teshu ramate buddhaha. Those wise people, those ones who have knowledge, they don't set their sights. They don't revel in those sense objects. They don't depend on those sense objects for their ananda. And so that actually is a mature person that's assimilated knowledge, right? Once the mind no longer is landing on a variety of sense objects or situations in order to give me peace, to give me ananda, right? For that person, there's no problem. The problem comes is when you've actually landed on an object in what we call a binding desire. A binding desire means that if the desire is not fulfilled, I will become upset. Kama and krodha, right? Non-binding desire is fine. That's really a jnani state. It means I have a desire for the object born out of the prarabdha, born out of my prarabdha karma. I want that. That would be nice, etc. But if I don't get it, that's fine. It's like the helium balloon for an adult, right? It's fine, I can have fun with it, I can enjoy it, it can make me happy, I can laugh, I can revel in it, have a great time, and when the balloon pops or when it goes its own way, that's also fine. It's not as though I become angry or upset or get into a lot of sorrow or dukkha over the changing of the situation. That's a non-binding desire. Now, in this verse we're talking about the binding desires and the things that really the mumukshu, the karma yogi, has to deal with. So that's where what this verse is referring to. It says, shaknoti iha eva yaha sodum. Shaknoti means the one who is able to, capable of. Shaknoti iha, here itself, in this very place, here in this world itself, the one who is able to sodum. Sodhum, we'll see, means to endure. So the one who is able to endure here itself, prak sharira vimokshanat, before the fall of the body, means as long as you're here, embodied with this body, with these sense organs, in this very world, as long as you're alive. So before the fall of the body, another way of saying that is, well, as long as you're living. Okay? So before the fall of the body, the one who can endure the vegam. Vega means a force, an energy, like a force is a vega. Which what? Kama krodha udbhavam. That force that is born of kama and krodha. It's very interesting. Kama and krodha. Kama is desire, krodha is anger. Anger, krodha, is thwarted desire. That's what brings about anger, right? Kama itself is, if you kama really, it's raga and dvesha. And these words actually I should put on our vocabulary list just to get them. So kama, krodha. Kama the, is basically desire. Desire is usually, is one word for two. The two words are raga and dvesha. Raga means a desire, a passion for something, a pravritti. I want this. That's a kama. That's a raga. The dvesha is the opposite. I don't want this. But both of these are forms of kama, right? I want this so that I pull the desire template. I want this so that I can be happy. That's kama and the raga, the desire in the form of raga. So it's positive. I want this so that I can be happy. The negative form of kama, of desire, is dvesha. I don't want this so that I can be happy. But both are kama. Now, a thwarted kama, either in the positive or the negative, is what we call krodha. I want this so that I can be happy, and so-and-so is stopping me from getting it. Or I'm not getting it for some reason. I'm not fulfilling the desire. And that can bring about anger. So we say, it can bring about other things too, like despair, you know, and sorrow and agitation. So krodha, in a way, capsulizes all of those negative reactions. So the anger and the upset that is caused by the thwarted desire, I want this so that I can be happy and I'm not getting it, that's krodha. Or the anger and the upset on the negative end, I don't want this and I'm getting it. Right? I don't want this and it's happening to me anyway. That produces krodha. And so kama and krodha go together. Krodha is just the negative side of kama. It means the thwarted kama. That's what it is. Now, kama and krodha that are non-binding, especially krodha won't really even come for a non-binding kama, because that means that the raga or the dvesha is, you know, that you have a raga for something. Whether if you get it, fine. If you don't get it, fine. You have a dislike of something, you get it, you don't get it, fine. Swamiji always does elaborate story of himself as a sannyasi and a sannyasi from Hindustan from the north. Go to a restaurant in Tamil Nadu. They go to a restaurant and Swamiji orders the, you know, idlis. Idlis dosa, perfect. And the Swami from the north orders chapatis and dal, perfect. Yeah. But when they're served, they get confused, mixed up, and so Swamiji ends up with the chapatis and dal, and the other Swami gets the idlis and dosa. They would rather have their own food. They would rather prefer their own food. But chapatis are fine. Idlis are fine. Right? That's a non-binding desire. I want my idlis, but here's the chapatis. I want my chapatis, but here's the idlis. Okay, it's okay. And it's really as simple as that. It's not what you wanted exactly, but you get it okay. It's fine. Doesn't matter. Nothing happens inside. There's no vega. That vega is the force the force that happens, the burn, you know, the energy that happens, that's generated by a kama or krodha. So Chakra uses an example. He describes kama and krodha. What is this vega? What does this force look like? He says, okay, well, for the kama, your eyes get big. your hair stands on end. The hair on your body gets that horripilation. Your eyes get really big. Your mouth opens. So he's just, you know, kind of trying to describe what it's like. You know, to have a desire and to go after something, the kind of excitements that your eyes get all big and your mouth, and ah, you know. And now, then how does he describe the krodha? Your eyes get like beady and red. you break out in a sweat, you know. You break out in your sweat. Your eyes get beady and red. You get a frown on your face. So he describes it like that. And then Swamiji, and I read his Abhasha, he says, and then you scream. You scream with anger. You scream. You can scream with anger and rage. This is all vega, you know. And so you can look at yourself. Everybody knows, like with kama and krodha, there is that heat that will come. Once that heat comes, that vega comes, that goes with the kama and krodha, once it comes, it is very tough to control it. Once it comes, it becomes in charge, right? It takes over the person. So once it's overwhelmed you, once the vega is there, then to be able to rein it back in is not that easy. So here he says, the person who, yaha, the one who here itself, while you're living, before you die, there's other ways what we'll take that in a minute, before you die, the one who's able to endure, to hold, to handle this vega, the force of this vega, right, that is born of kama and krodha, that person is yukta, that person's a karma yogi. And that person is sukhi. That person is happy. That person has happiness. Otherwise, the person is riding the waves of samsara, right? Because that means that you're subject to the kama and krodha. You're subject to the objects that light up in the world, and then you have the desire for that object, and then the heat comes for the object, and then you're taken on that wild ride. And so what Shankara says in his Bhasha is that this actually, for the karma yogi, this control of the vega, of the kama and krodha, is a lifetime job. It's not like, at say, a kama, a desire has come, and then you control it, and so now the job is over. Okay. The job is over for that one, you know. Then the next situation comes, the same kama and krodha keeps coming. He says, you know, it is actually like eating, like breathing. It's part of being a human being. As long as my ananda, as long as the ananda, the wholeness, is projected onto the world, as long as that is happening, kama and krodha will be accompanying you. Right? If the ananda is projected onto the world to such a degree that I need this to be happy, it's not a non-binding desire, it's a binding desire, to that degree, kama and krodha will be following along with me. And so therefore, how to, as a karma yogi, somebody who's a mumukshu, who is on their way to gaining nishta in this knowledge, having a mind that is abiding in this knowledge, how to handle the vega, the intensity of the kama and krodha, and that is really through the karma yoga buddhi, the prasada buddhi, the commitment to dharma, the commitment to the focus on doing what is in front of me as my prarabdha, to living the life, to having a commitment to engaging in the life that is before me in a way that is dharmic, to following dharma. Another way to say it, to following dharma in reference to the life that I have in front of me. This is my life. And so then to have as my priority the being dharmic within this life and taking as prasad, as prasad from Ishvara, the results of my actions. If I want something, I may go after that, but I take the results of my actions as prasad from the Lord. That's that prasada buddhi. And also that, along with that karma yoga buddhi, is prayer. You know? Especially when the vega is there. You know, because once that that force is there, then you have to metabolize it. You know? It's all right to act out on that force to some degree, but you have, if you're going to act out on the force, I mean in a dharmic way, the force of the kama, if you're going to act out on it, you have to have that prasada buddhi in place. Right? And if you act out on it, and without the prasada buddhi in place, then your mind will go off even more. It'll go, you know, the vega will increase and increase and increase. But then you can draw it back. You can draw it back with prayer and with your jnanam. Right? That's why we use our knowledge, right? Until the mind doesn't need to have it, your knowledge used. Right? Until that's actually natural for your mind, because you've assimilated the reality of it, which takes some time. Once you've assimilated the reality of it, your mind sits home. That's the Sarvakarma Sannyasi. That's the jnani. Your mind doesn't... Everything is a non-binding desire. That's the thing. It's not, there's no desire. It's not that there's no desires there. The desires themselves are the prarabdha karma, right? So those desires, those preferences are there, but they're non-binding. They don't grip me. And they don't catch me like that. But as long as they do catch me, then I hold that vega. I hold the kama and krodha with my knowledge and with prayer. Prayer means what? Really, prayer is jnanam. Means what? Ishvara. Prayer is recognizing Ishvara, bringing the situation back to myself, bringing the situation back to Ishvara, bringing the situation back to my knowledge, letting my knowledge hold the vega. I'd say like that. Letting my knowledge, what I know to be true, let my that vega, let that force, you know, sit and be metabolized by my knowledge. And so that's the karma yoga buddhi. And that's what I do until this kama and krodha resolve itself. So now, but what he says is for the karma yogi, until that attitude, because the karma yogi is the mumukshu, the one who is gaining knowledge. And so until that knowledge takes place, until that nishtha takes place, the person who is able to handle this force, the force of this kama and krodha, that person is somebody who we call a karma yogi. And that person is happy. That person has sukha. How does he say it? He says, sa sukhi naraha. That is a happy man. Naraha means man, okay? So we say person. Saha sukhi, sukhi and sukhi. That person has happiness. That person has peace. Right? Because without it, the mind is like Arjuna uses, he says in a verse, I think it's still coming. He says, why is my mind is like a ship in a storm. I think we had that verse. My mind is like a ship out at sea in the middle of a storm. You know? How to bring it back? How to bring this wild mind back? Mm. You know. And so a person who's bound by kama and krodha, that person is like a ship in a storm, you know, just being bounced around by the waves. A person who has control over that vega, right, who can metabolize it, then there's a steady base there. So that Ishvara Arpana Buddhi gives that. And then that mind eventually, with jnanam, resolves. That problem resolves in the light of knowledge. So, so the next verse, he talks about the one who does have jnanam, who has jnana nishtha. Mm-hmm. Yo antasukham tara ramaha. Yo antasukham tara ramaha. Tatantara jyotirevayaha. Tatantara jyotirevayaha. Sayogi brahma nirvanam.
Sayogi brahma nirvanam.
Brahma bhuto tigacchati.
Brahma bhuto tigacchati.
Yaha antaha sukaha antasukaha antar aramaha tatha antar jyotihi eva yaha saha yogi brahma nirvanam brahma bhutaha atigacchati. He says, now, he who yaha antasukaha, the one who is ananda, who's sukha, is anta, inside. Antara means inside. That's different than having superimposed that ananda, that sukha, on the world. The one who's not superimposing the sukha, the happiness, on the world, bahir. Bahir means external. So the one whose ananda is not external, the one whose ananda is antara, antaha, inside, the atma, right? So antasukha means really the one whose ananda, wholeness, sukha, the mind has recognized that the ananda, the sukha, is the atma, that there is not an external form of sukha, that the only sukha that there is really is the atma. So the one who is this antasukha, the one for whom the sukha is inside, is the atma. And who is antara aramaha, the one who's fun, arama, means whose sport, whose enjoyment, whose fun is internal. Means I don't have to go out and entertain myself in order to have fun. I'm not bored with myself. Right? The fun is myself. The joy is myself. The entertainment is internal. I don't have to go do something to, not that I don't need, that I don't do something to have fun. It's not that you can't go out and do something to have fun. So you don't think like that. You don't think I have to go out and do something to have fun. You're already having fun. You are the fun. You're the aramaha, means you're reveling in the self which is the ananda. So say you think I have to go have fun so that I can be happy. You know, so that I can be playful, so that I can be having a good time. You don't have to go into the world to have a good time. Having a good time, you are in the world. It's a big difference. Enjoying the ananda, which is myself, I am having a good time. In Swamiji's Bhasha, he talks about, I have enough entertainment just with my mind. The mind itself is a great entertainment, just to watch and see that all of the silly things that it does, all of the things that it thinks about, all of the imaginations, all of the things that's enough entertainment. There's no need to go out for anything more. So but the idea is antara aramaha, I am satisfied in myself. I don't need to go out into the world in order to pleasure myself. I'm already full and complete and enjoying myself, just by the very nature of my being. So, antara aramaha tata. Similarly, antara jyotihi evayaha. The one whose jyotihi here means the manas, the mind. The one whose mind is awake to the self. Jyotish means light, right? So the light of the mind enjoys the light of consciousness. And so the one whose mind is awake to that consciousness, being the Atma, the one whose mind is awake to the self, to the consciousness which the mind enjoys consciousness, that Jyotish, right? But that consciousness that the mind enjoys as me, as the I, right? Because for the Ajnani will say, Am I the conscious being in my mind? The mind is talking. The mind talking says, I am the conscious being. That's the mind talking about itself. But the unfettered Jyotish is the one, the mind that realizes that the consciousness which it enjoys is the Atma. That this consciousness which I am, right? The mind is consciousness, right? In this sense, the mind enjoys conscious being. So that's what the mind can say so intimately. I am, right? The mind says, I am. I am a conscious being. But it takes its self to be the conscious being. Rather than saying, being able to say, I am the conscious being, I am the self, but the self is free from me. That's satyam mitya. Understand? This is, the mind has to be able to say, to recognize that the consciousness and the being, which is its very self, is free of the mind. All of the mind, all of the thoughts, the moods, the emotions, the modifications, all of the nama-rupa, all of the names and forms and fluctuations that the mind takes, that's all a mitya. But that mitya enjoys a satyam, a truth. The truth, the substance of that mind is the self, which is consciousness, which is being. But the thing is, the conscious being, the me, is always there, stable. The being, the consciousness that the mind enjoys, never fluctuates at all. It never changes in any way. The mind can have all kinds of emotions and thoughts and feelings and all of that, but I am the one that is there as the very self of those fluctuating thoughts and feelings and emotions. And that self, the consciousness, which the mind is totally identified with it, with as me, right? It is properly it properly recognizes that self as me. That self is me. That is Brahman. That self is Brahman. But the Ajnani mind, the ignorant mind, doesn't recognize, doesn't differentiate its very self from the mityatvam of itself. Right? It's like the pot not being able to differentiate its form from its truth, the clay. The jnani differentiates the stable substance, the conscious being that I am, from all of the fluctuating feelings and moods and thoughts. All of those take place in me, have me for themselves, for their self. But the jnani recognizes, that's true, but the jnani recognizes the stability of me, the changelessness of me. And so the one who is awake to the fact that the consciousness that I enjoy is free of the mind, the consciousness that I enjoy is stable and changeless, that one is called Antara Jyotihi. So now, these three words are beautiful words for describing the jnani, the one who is antasukaha, whose ananda is the self, who is antararamaha, who is entertained by the self, who is antasjyotihi, antarajyotihi, whose mind is awake to the consciousness, which is the self. Right? So that one, that sahayogi, that yogi is, we'll see what yogi means in a minute, sahayogi, brahma nirvanam, brahma buddha adigachati. That yogi means that one who has gained knowledge, who is brahma buddha, who has become Brahman. And that's the yogi, right? The Atma has gained Brahmatvam, brahma buddha. The Atma has become Brahman. Has the Atma become Brahman somehow by changing into Brahman? No. The Atma has become Brahman in the sense that the Atma has been recognized as Brahman. I've recognized myself as Brahman. And that person who has recognized oneself as Brahman, recognized that the Atma is Brahman, that the self is Brahman, that person, adigacchati, that person gains Brahma Nirvanam. Brahma Nirvanam is moksha. Nirvanam here means nirvritti. Nirvritti means anandam, the anandam, the anandam, which is Brahman. So that person gains the limitlessness, which is the very nature of the self. If I identify, if I haven't recognized the limitlessness of the self, which is totally present at this moment as your very self experience, what makes that as though not gained is simply the ignorance, the ajnanam that causes you to mix up, to superimpose yourself onto this body, mind, sense organs, and onto the world in terms of the world's existence and the ananda that you superimpose onto the world. Right? That's what causes that. That's the whole problem right there. The Brahman Nirvanam, the ananda, which is Brahman, is already completely, wholly present, experientially present as your very being. But your focus of your mind is on the vagaries of the world. You know, the sukha and dukkha of the world. And my concerns about the sukha and dukkha possibilities in the world. That's what we do. We spend our life concerned, experiencing sukha and dukkha, and concerned about whether or not we're going to be experiencing sukha and dukkha. Right? This is our story. This is it. You know? You can even go Swamiji like this. There's sukha and dukkha. Now, we have sorrow over the sukha and dukkha that we have experienced in the past. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
We have concerns, sorrow about that. And we have fear about the sukha and dukkha that we will experience in the future. Fear about not gaining the sukha, right? And fear about gaining the dukkha. So that's a worry. And then in the past, it's the regret over missed sukha and gained dukkha. So now we have the present, right? Which is once in a while concerned with actual sukha and dukkha in the present, but more often hurting over imagined sukha or dukkha yet to come, right, yet to come, or grieving over sukha and dukkha, lost sukha, gained dukkha in the past. So we actually don't spend very much time in the present. Really, because the mind is too preoccupied with the past or the future. And this is so interesting because, you see, we have the present. The one thing that you do have is the present. But because you have it and you're not happy, it doesn't count. Right? The present doesn't count because you're not happy. Right? And you're not happy because you're concerned over the sukha that you may not get and the dukkha that you may get. Honestly. Mm. Or you're grieving and regretting your past experiences because your past experiences have gotten you into this mess that you're in the moment. It's a really, really very interesting when you think of the situation. So now, the one who knows the self, that person is actually freed from all of that. Because the ananda, the anandam, which is your own nature and which is the source of these little, what we call these little leshas, these little glimpses of sukha that are brought about by the moments when your mind is calm. They give little reflections of sukha, you know, and so that's what we're working for in the world. But actually, the ananda of the self, which is present as the stable backdrop, the very satyam of all of your experience, that ananda is not subject to sukha and dukkha. It is its own sukha. It is ananda, and it is changeless. And so, and it is right here. It is you. It is where there's no distance between you and this wholeness. It's just that the mind has not recognized. It's not recognized this subtle, strong fullness that is me, the me, the ananda of the me, the ananda of the self, of your own swarupa, of your own nature, the one that is abiding as the very self of all of your experience. That self is more ananda than you can ever get in these bliss experiences of bliss and all of that. So there's nothing wrong with those. They're fine. But they don't compare to the stability of the ananda of your own being. There's no comparison. But you have to notice that. And your mind is too busy noticing and trying to find, create a situation to get these little glimpses of peace in the mind. Create little situations where you get these little glimpses of peace. And then you try to hang on to these mental states. You think what you're trying to do is hang on to a mental state that has been generated by everything being perfect for the moment. In other words, I have a desire, my mind has a desire, and the object of desire is there, and somehow the mind and the object of desire line up for a moment. And in that moment of everything lining up perfectly, my mind relaxes. And when it relaxes, I say, oh, I'm so happy, this is so wonderful, I love you. That's what it is. That is the grand illusion. The jnani doesn't go through that process anymore. Nor does the jnani look even to the vritti to give me the ananda. The jnani looks to the ananda for the ananda. The ananda is not, the ananda, the brahmananda, is not a product of a vritti. It is not your sukha-vritti that is giving you the ananda. You don't need the sukha-vritti. The ananda is stable. It is the very swarupa of yourself. It's aparoksha. It's not something that you need to generate. Or this is the big illusion. I am ananda. This is why Swamiji always makes fun of this. I am ananda. I recognize that I am ananda. But my mind keeps covering it over. My mind covers over the ananda. And so in my mind, you know, when my mind is upset or my mind is hurt or depressed or agitated, it's covering over the ananda. And so I don't get to experience it then. Right? Because now the mind keeps covering it over. When will my mind not cover over the ananda, Swamiji? You know? What can I do to stop my mind from the acting like this and covering over my ananda? I know that I am ananda. You know, this kind of talk, you go on and on. This is so important to understand. It's not to say that a mind that's in pain is something that we want. It's like I don't like my house when to be dirty. I would like to clean it. You know, and I don't like that I have too many things in my house right now. Come to think of it, you know, I would like to get rid of those things. You know, like that any dukkha or agitation. It's not that we like those things because they produce pain. It's like if your body is hurting you, you would like to heal it. Right? If your mind is hurting you, you would like to heal it. But is that mind covering the Brahmananda? Is it covering the ananda? That's the question. And that's the misunderstanding, that your mind has the capacity to cover the ananda of your being as though you are not there. Now, one example, one drishtanta illustration that can cause this problem if it's not understood properly is the cloud and the sun. It's that illustration. This illustration goes like this. The sun is, of course, shining. But, you know, and I'm enjoying the sun, standing on the earth, I'm looking up and enjoying the brilliance of the sun. But a storm cloud starts coming in, right? And when the storm cloud comes in, right, at that time, because the sun is there, I can see the storm clouds. I know that the sun is behind the storm clouds, but I can't see it. I know that it's there, and I know that it's because the sun is there that I can see the storm clouds. Otherwise, they wouldn't be illumined. I wouldn't be able to know them. And so, like that, when the storm clouds of my mind come in, the hurts and the pains of the mind, I know that these, I know that the self is there because the storm clouds are known. Right? The pain in the mind is known. Even though I can't see the ananda of the sun, the nature of the sun is covered, still I know that the nature of myself, I know that I am there because these storm clouds, these pains are illumined. That's how this example can be botched. Okay? Because actually, this is the reality of it. If we look at it like this, in this illustration, who are you? Who are you in the illustration? You're not the storm clouds. The storm clouds are the sun. Right? You are the sun. You are the sun. Right? In this illustration, you are the sun. The storm clouds have come. Right? Without the storm clouds, so the storm clouds haven't come. Now the sun is illumining the earth. The storm clouds have come. Now the sun is illumining the storm clouds. Has the sun, which you are, is the sun affected by what it's illumining? Is the sun affected by illumining the storm clouds? No. Is the sun affected by illumining the absence of the storm clouds? Not at all. Does the sun feel, I am sorrow, I am stormy, I have become stormy, I am raining? Does the sun feel that? It can't feel that. It hasn't become that. The sun is the sun. And in the same way, remember aparoksha, consciousness is consciousness. It is self-evident. And self-evident consciousness, the being that you are, the me that you are, is illumining whatever is there. But the being that you are is its own experience. The ananda, which is the being that you are, is in no way covered by the storm clouds. The self-experience is not covered by the storm clouds. And so therefore, when you have storm clouds, when you have emotions, when you have darkness, you know, or hurts, or emotions, or agitations, just take a moment to see whether or not you are there. The ananda that is there in when the storm clouds are absent is the same ananda that is there when the storm clouds are present. The ananda isn't dependent upon the vritti. The ananda is the truth of the vritti. It illumines the vritti. It's the conscious being of the vritti. But it's not covered by the vritti. There's no bag over its head. Even if you put a bag over your head, you're still inside the bag. Right? If I put a bag over my head, I'm not hidden from myself. You can't see my head. Right? But I'm in there. Right? Looking at the bag now. Right? I'm the conscious being inside the bag, aware of the bag. If I take the bag off, I'm still the same conscious being, now looking out at the world. So the thing to note, in fact, I think it's a good exercise to, when you're just walking around, whatever you're doing, whatever you're feeling, whatever you're thinking, to keep noticing that you are there in exactly the same way, without any modification whatsoever. And you just go on noticing that. No, I'm still there. I remember doing this when I was in India, you know, with Swamiji in the 70s, when I first kind of recognized, oh, they mean me. And then I would walk around like this. So if I go like this, you know, does anything happen to me? Can I think that I would try having all different thoughts, all kinds of thoughts, to see, is this covering me? Am I still there? Is anything happening? And I would go on, it was astounding to me. I mean, I was totally flabbergasted by it. But no, nothing's happening. No, nothing's happening. I'm still there in exactly the same way. And then you notice when you have different types of thoughts, are you still there? Are you still there? And then after a time, you say, yeah, I'm here. And then you get used to the fact of it. That in fact, you as you are always here in exactly the same way. You're Swarupa. It never changes in any way. That is Brahman. And that's what the jnani that is predominant, right? And it should be predominant. Think about this. It's like how ridiculous this is. It's like the pot saying, yes, the clay has finally become predominant. You have a clay pot. Pot says, the clay, you know, yes, the clay has become dominant. It's predominant. It's in the forefront of my mind. But that's what it is. You know, so we think, oh, gee, you know. The Atma, the self, now has become predominant. When actually that's the only thing that is there. The only thing that is there in any type of stable way. The mitya is coming and going and coming and going. But the mitya itself has no being apart from the Atma. Right? And so it's just what's really happened is that you've recognized the constant. You've recognized the constancy of your own being, which is always there, pervasive to the totality of all experience. And once the mind sees that, then it revels in that. In fact, it can never get away from that. It's like the graham cracker story. You know, the graham crackers, the elephant graham cracker, and the giraffe graham cracker, and the cat and the dog graham cracker. Everything's only a graham cracker in reality. So you finally get to see the graham cracker. And the graham cracker of the universe. You see what is actually there. That is jnanam. And when your mind gets lost, you know, then you should get lost. You have to give it a break, for heaven's sakes. You know, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, beginningless lifetimes until we finally gain knowledge. The mind is so conditioned to running out into the world, to superimposing ananda on the world, and then going out with this raga dvesha, with these desires. And so you just bring it back to what you know to be true. You know, recognize it as Ishvara. If your mind is overwhelmed with that vega, with the force of that raga or dvesha, or the force of the anger or the desire, you know, and all of the tension and stress that can cause, you can just, you know, you can bring all of that back home. You can pray. You can bring in Ishvara, you know, and help to resolve all of that. It's painful. And so you put all of that hurt and stress at the feet of Bhagavan, and that makes it a lot better. So he says, anyway, the one who has these three, antasukaha, antararamaha, tata antarjyotihi, that yogi, that one whose being is Brahman, right? That person gains the Brahman Nirvanam, the Ananda which is Brahman. And it's a gain of the gains, right? It's called praptasya praptihi. I always say that the self-knowledge, moksha, is praptasya praptihi, the attainment of the attained. It's the gain of the gained. It's the recognition of what has always been there. And even though it's the recognition of what has always been there, it's such a wonderful shock. You know, even though you recognize you're not experiencing anything new, but you're recognizing what has always been there in a totally different, in a totally new way. Yeah, so it's a beautiful thing. Let me just check the camera. Let's just stop here.
Okay.
Purnamada, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamadachyate, Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.